Psychic Radio is now CBS Radio's The Sky. Back to Behind the Paranormal with Paul and Ben Eno.
Call now.
248-545-SOUL. New SkyRadio.com.
Believe.
Who or what are these gray aliens who figure so prominently in close encounters with UFOs? If they really exist, do they mean us good, harm, or neither? Could the Shroud of Turin have something to tell us about it? Well, hello, and welcome to the 171st edition of Behind the Paranormal with Paul and Ben Eno. I'm Paul, and my son, co-host, and partner, Ben, is who was supposed to be here this evening, is on a rather interesting case. It is what we refer to as a parasite case in Massachusetts, and he had intended to be back, but he simply called in to report that things were going very interestingly, and he'll have a report tomorrow night on our New England Drive Time show when our subject is ghosts. So we wish him well, and I can't wait to hear what's happening. Our guest this evening is Nigel Kerner, an author and freelance journalist. He was born in Sri Lanka. His mother from a British planting family and his father an officer in the Royal Navy. This international family base helped prompt a deep interest in international human affairs and how these interface with science, religion, and philosophy. From his youth, Mr. Kerner has felt driven to expose the, quote, humbug and hypocrisy in modern scientific, religious, and social thinking, unquote. Boy, I'm sure with him on that. His formal graduate education is in biomedical science and human behavioral psychology. His fascination with UFO phenomena resulted in his first book, The Song of the Greys. That sounds lovely. I don't know if it is or not, but anyway, published by Hodder and Stoughton in 1997. This book is now noted worldwide for its radical view on the phenomenon. His latest book, Gray Aliens and Harvesting of Soul, and The Harvesting of Souls, a chilling title, I'm halfway through it, published by Inner Traditions, Bear and Company, is the second in a trilogy about the UFO phenomenon and its social repercussions for humanity. Nigel Kerner lives with his wife and family on his estate in Middle England. His website, www.nigelkerner.com. And we also have with us Dr. Andrew Silverman, a medical doctor, and Dr. Andrew Professor John Biggerstaff, Dr. Biggerstaff, of the University of Tennessee. Gentlemen, welcome all to Behind the Paranormal.
Thank you very much. This is Nigel here.
Hi.
You were so quiet, I was afraid you weren't there. Don't do that to me. All right, well, very good. Now, Nigel, well, what county do you live in England?
Sorry.
What county do you live in?
Well, I live in my home is in Northampton in England.
Okay, very good. Yes. As I have relatives all over England, that's why.
Really?
Now, yes. We have all sorts of questions this evening, gentlemen, and we thank you for staying up so late. It's midnight where you are, I'm sure. We're trying to catch up with the times here, but we just don't seem to be able to do it. We're going to ask Mr. Kerner, and other guests are invited to add answers as they wish and have our discussion that way. Now, Nigel, what do you believe are the origins of what we call gray aliens? Do they turn up in human folklore? I mean, how far back do they go? What's going on here?
Well, this business seems to have been going on for thousands of years, and whatever point of view you like to look at it, you get petroglyphs of them, 40,000 year old petroglyphs on walls and in caves, and of course you've got an entire encyclopedia of their historical carryings on, shall we say, on the earth. And it depends on how you want to view the phenomenon, but they have been looked at as gods and demons and whatever, and I think they're quite simply a extraterrestrial component. Robots to be exact, that have happened upon our planet many thousands of years ago, causing probably the most radical and interesting alteration of the human perspective ever. That's no small claim, but I think that they have established themselves beyond any resource to be a genuine phenomenon, and it's something that I think every single human being on the planet really ought to know about.
Yeah, we agree. And I'm proceeding with Ben's questions here. People report many other kinds of aliens and humanoids. Are these connected with the Greys, or are they a separate problem or gift, depending on your point of view? You often hear Greys working with other forms of life. I mean, are these not robots, or what's going on with that?
I from my take on this, and my research goes back about 37 years, my take is quite simply the discovery of this particular phenomenon we call the Greys. I don't really know about any other form of extraterrestrial interception on the planet except this particular thing, because it seems to be the prevalent thing that most people are concerned about. And from the stories that give this thing some perspective in reality and truth, I believe that they are the only ones to be taken seriously, and in fact the only ones that have been the, if you like, the special influence on the human species through history. And so I rather shied away from a look at other expressions of this kind of phenomenon, be they subjective or objective. But this is really, believe me, in terms of what I've discovered, quite enough to be getting on with.
I agree. They certainly do seem to dominate the reports and even the folklore. Now, does Dr. Bickerstaff or Dr. Silverman have anything to add to what we've said so far?
Not as yet, no.
All right. That's okay. Very good. That was Dr. Silverman. Okay. Why do you think the Greys are seen so often in abduction experiences? And what do you think their agenda might be with us?
Well, perhaps I can kind of, I mean, you know, take this a little bit to a detailed perspective.
Please.
We can see, can't we, the kind of damage wrecked by technological processes, and that these may eventually render our planet inhospitable to life, as we all seem to see in present circumstances. We can see how that the same technology and the progress in it leads to the scope for nuclear catastrophe on a scale that would achieve this even faster, you know? So let's say the same has happened on some other planetary location in the universe, and we've just, it seems, relatively recently discovered that not only are there other planets around stars, but in fact the latest news seems to be that there are hundreds of millions of Earth-like planets in our galaxy alone. Now, if this is the case, then this business of extraterrestrials is something that we all will be tending to take on in the future, I'm sure, more and more. And for me, these things, it seems, are some kind of interceptional agency that has had the technology to get from place to place past the Einstein limit of, you know, the speed of light and whatever, through this incredible technology. And to me, they may be gophers, you know, the kind of gopher this, gopher. They may be something that's sent out into the universe to reconstitute their life form, perhaps, through cloning procedures elsewhere. Now, we are sending at this moment in time all kinds of robots out into space, scouting around asteroids, what have you, and it would seem easy for us to see that some advanced civilization may well have done this many yorks ago, you know, centuries, maybe millennia ago, and they too, with technologies far in advance of ours. Ours is, after all, just 200 years. Mechanical industrial technology is about 200 years old. And so, for me, this is a very simple premise. These things may go out, and because of some, perhaps, accident on their own planet, they go out into space. They are a roboidic form because they have to negotiate vast speeds and vast distances, and not only to accelerate beyond the speed of light, maybe into huge, huge speeds that can actually cover the planetary distances and so forth. They could therefore then attempt, when they get to these places, to hybridize the forms of life that can survive on our planet, and to merge species, shall we say, with one already adapted for the local conditions, and say, shall we say, clone or reclone humanity in hybrid mixtures with them. Now, if we are seeking to do this, and recently Professor the famous Stephen Hawking is supposed to have said that our future is out there in space, that we ought to send you know, portions of ourself, our DNA may be, to other planets and go out there and colonize this place and no doubt cause the same havoc we seem to have done on this planet. I don't quite agree that we should do this, by the way, but the fact is that, you know, you can, I think you see where I'm coming from.
Exactly.
Instead of tending what we have to tend to in our own backyard, so to speak, why go and cause the same trouble elsewhere? Maybe these things had no choice. Maybe there was some catastrophe that brought them over here. But I tell you, they have been in this planet that for certain, in terms of my own researches, for many thousands of years, and have been here lingering covertly within the framework of our species, and maybe even altering our species to gradually altering it to suit their own.
All right. Everything you say is entirely reasonable. And we're coming down to a break here, but just to consider, well, I guess we're coming up to a break sooner than I thought. When we come back, I wanted to ask our guest a question, that the usual canted kind of question you get on this show, and we'll see see what the answer is. But you're listening to Behind the Paranormal with Paul and Ben Eno, without the Ben today, I'm sorry to say, on the CBS New Sky Radio, newskyradio.com, and our guest, Nigel Kerner, author and expert in gray aliens, and we're having a fascinating conversation about that, one which sends chills up my spine already, and we will be right back. Stay with us.
Psychic Radio is now CBS Radio's The Sky. Back to Behind the Paranormal with Paul and Ben Eno. Call now 248-545-SOUL. New skyradio.com.
And we are back with several guests, notably Dr. Andrew Silverman of MD and Dr. John Biggerstaff of the University of Tennessee, and our main guest, Nigel, of course, our author and our good friend Nigel Kerner, who was talking about grays this evening, and we are having quite a conversation. Now, he has expressed his opinion that these are robots seeking to propagate or hybridize, and that's a perfectly reasonable explanation. However, as I was telling him during the break, I have my advanced degree is in philosophy, and I think in a rather canted way, and I don't like Western categorical thought. However, the question is, Nigel, I agree, of course, with everything you say, very possible, but are you being too quick to apply human motives as opposed to an agenda so alien that we wouldn't think of it? And don't ask me what it is, because I can't think of it either.
It would be rather difficult to envisage anything outside the human perspective, wouldn't you say? Because we are human ourselves.
Indeed, unless one meditates very deeply.
Yeah, so I mean, whatever the alien agenda might be, perhaps Dr. Silverman might be able to do a take on this.
I was just going to say, from the philosophical point of view, surely the most fundamental thing within any perspective is to be able to exist in the first place. Now, as I understand it, Nigel's thesis about the greys is that this is all to do with continuing their existence, which doesn't need to anthropomorphize their motives, because anything has to exist if it's going to be there in the first place to have any motives or any local species specific motives. It first has to be there in the first place.
Yeah. And the point about these greys, and the reason I say they might be robots, because there is no doubt that there's structure and physical material aspects to their to what's been discovered about them by so many experts, that it would be greatly insulting to all the great minds that have looked at this, and trustworthy minds, not the people who might be given to hyperbole or whatever, but they really do come forth. You've got astronauts, you've got priests, you've got doctors, responsible people and pilots who've made, what, something like 8,000 or 9,000 pilot reports from recent counts, whatever. These things really are here, and they are solid, and they're real. Now, the point is, we've got to try to account for the fact as to why they're real. That's the interesting thing. If you accept that they're real, how do we view this kind of reality, this physical reality, in such a way as to try to make sense of why they would be here, what they want from us, relatively primitive. If they can come here from these vast distances, our technology is just basic compared to that. So what is it about humanity that they find so fascinating that they would linger here? And the most more interesting thing from my point of view is, why are they covert? Why are they hiding? Why can't, if their sense is benevolent and beneficent to our species, why can't they make that direct appeal to us all, not go through governments, whatever? They're so powerful, they will be able to reach every part of the world and give us all the messages of all this beneficence they would like. Oh, no, they seem to be hiding. And that's the really dangerous thing. So looking as to why such a thing phenomenon might do such things is the interesting thing. And the conclusion I arrived at, Paul, is quite simply that these guys must be something of a psychological tenure that is really not natural in terms of, shall we say, biological life. I think there is here a hint of 0-1 computer type program psychologies that go 1 + 1 = 1 + 1. We Indeed. Might actually sometimes have the imagination to make that too, if you see what I mean. I think people who profess mathematics might understand what I mean by that. The fact is that this is what we've got to look for. What is this thing that these things might, if they are here, might be looking for about the human race? And the interesting thing is that I discovered that we are far more than just spindly little things with arms and legs. We've got propensities that are so grand that it would take a wonderful person 2,000 years ago. By the way, I'm not spinning the line of any church or whatever, but I believe that there was an incredible phenomenon called Jesus Christ or Jeshua ben Yosef, to give him his proper name, and that this individual came and pointed out something very dangerous to us. I think his entire ministry was nothing to do with religion and all the rest of the stuff you get from organized situations. I think he came to say, look, you have got here a big danger in as much as you've got a mechanical intelligence here, and this mechanical intelligence will ask of you things not to your benefit, and I've come to tell you what and who you are and what you're capable of, and you've got to resist this or you might lose an eternal scale for existence. Now, if that's a big enough answer for me to kind of, you know, satisfy why these things might be on this planet.
Well, as they say, wow. I hope you have many late nights that you don't mind spending with us, because this is going to take far more than one show. Let me hit you with this. I agree with, in my heart, as an investigator from another point of view with the paranormal, everything you say rings true with me. We've investigated ghosts, and I, of course, for 40 years, I keep running into grays. And we'll get into that in a minute. But I first wanted to ask you, we have many guests from the exopolitics school of thinking, people who believe that aliens, including grays, are here to save humanity and bring us a brave new world. This seems to be a majority opinion. I mean, despite the horrors you hear about people who have been abducted, why do you disagree so vehemently with, and I do too, with the messianic view of aliens?
Well, I don't. I mean,
I think just have described some of that.
No. I think the most important thing to say about this is that you are on the button there. You would see grays in this psychic domain or this kind of beyond this world type perspective that some people have. But to answer your question, when I talk about the messianic thing, I am actually talking about that component of us that is opposite to our physical state as we are in physical life. And that is explained by this incredible appearance of this individual who told us that there is a status beyond this life. Now, this has been kind of borne out by so many verifications in terms of other religions and so on right through history. My point is that unless you connect up these grays to something as large as this, our status beyond physical life, and then we've got the abductees and affirming that there is this particular phenomenon going on and so forth, that there might be also NDEs that might affirm that there is life beyond life, so to speak. I think you asked me if the aliens are messianic. I don't think they're messianic at all. I think they're what the messianic promulgation came here to deny that these things are really things that are not of a messianic nature at all, that they are just of the culture of the universe, made out of the universe, and that messianic sources beyond the universe might be here to warn us of their danger.
Now we're getting to the heart of your book, Gray Aliens and the Harvesting of Souls, and you say that the alien agenda is centered on, as you've been saying, their quest to find for themselves an eternal existence. Could you say something about that, please?
Yeah, well, I think that we have the scope to be to live beyond physical life. And I have this particular thing very strongly in me, from not just from my own subjective sense of it, and really that comes secondary to the kinds of affirmations I have read in many, many learned dissertations about the thing, including some of the things that people come up with there, describing to their NDEs and so forth, that there is this, as I say, scope to go beyond. And the ancient Eastern religion, in fact, every single religion, actually, at one time, Paul, accepted this principle of reincarnation as a methodology where existence can
pretty
carry
much.
On.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. And in fact, the Christians threw it out when Justinian's wife, Theodora, was told by some kind of a witch or whatever that she was a witch in a past life. She was so incensed by She was so incensed.
I've heard that, yeah.
So history goes and so on, that she chucked the whole lot out. And apart from that, we have a bunch of people in 324 AD, I believe. I may be wrong exactly on that date, but that took the wonderful experiences of a certain individual in Judea and turned it on its head, threw out the most interesting stuff from that. Which
is 325, actually.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Council of Nicaea. Yeah. Okay.
Fair enough. Yeah, and this particular symposium threw all the interesting stuff out, and you find it in the Nag Hammadi and the Pistis Sophia and all the other authorities that they've thrown out,
mm-hmm.
left us a small compendium on which to follow their own particular recipe, called it a religion, and I believe have misled humanity ever since. However,
well, I tend to agree. I mean, there's more to it, but you pretty much hit it on the head. Not to interrupt you, but taking that thought, how do you get from there to Jesus talking about grays or warnings?
Well, very simply, do you remember the story of him being taken up this mountain and this very high place, and he was asked, you know, he was shown all the cities of the world from that particular place, and he was asked at that juncture to fall down and worship some entity that would be able to take him to a place where he could see all the cities of the world. Now, where on earth could you see all the cities of the world? Not from some high mountain, but obviously from space. And I believe that that's an indication that this guy was actually intercepted by these entities that were already on the earth. And Jesus told them something incredible, I think, that actually saved his own life or whatever and brought him straight back down to earth, so to speak. He told him, "Get thee behind me, Satan. It is written that thou shalt not tempt the Son of Man." I believe that in those words, he was actually telling a robot what a robot is, because the one thing a robot can't know is what it is, because it's of a program, so to speak. Institutionally, its thinkability is programmed. And within that scale of reference, I think that was information to this roboid or whatever it is that actually did this business with this man, with Jesus. And so there's an indication to me here that there was a hint, one of the few, I'm just quoting a few of them. There are many scattered around the codexes where you can find, if you suspect that there might be an alien agency here that we can explain as evil, the devil, and all these heebie-jeebies that we're told exist and so forth. And I believe that this technological bend on the one side with the greys against our natural existential dominion as a natural species, we come in a single line from the beginning of the universe, right down to you and me now. This particular single line continues on, and we may go in life and come back through death, back in life again, if reincarnation is true. There is a continuum that says there we can last much longer than 70 years. These things may well be a creation made by some technology or whatever it is that makes machines out of this universe. They don't come from the beginning of the universe. They are made and fashioned here. Now, that's where the connection comes. They are fascinated by what we can do as natural being.
And I lost you for a moment there. Okay.
Yeah.
So, sounds good now. All right, we're coming up on a break, but there are two lines of questions that come to mind. One is the reliability of the texts of, or in this case, the Bible that we have now, because there are a number of these things that they didn't go into in the seminary, including what you just said. And also the issue of, how can I put it? Well, again, this is a matter of Western thinking versus something else. How do we approach this and what do we do about it? Okay, we have to wrap for a commercial break right now, and you're listening to Behind the Paranormal with Paul and Ben Eno on CBS New Sky Radio, newskyradio.com. We will be right back with our guest, Nigel Curnow, and our fellow doctors. I'm looking at something on the screen here. But stay with us. It's a fascinating conversation.
Back to Behind the Paranormal with Paul and Ben Eno. Call now 248-545-SOUL. NewSkyRadio.com. Believe.
Hey, welcome back, and we're going to continue our conversation with author Nigel Curnow and company here on Behind the Paranormal. And we are having a fascinating conversation about grays, gray aliens, their nature, who they are, what they want, where they come from. And their nature perhaps as robots, as Mr. Curnow was suggesting in his outstanding book, Gray Aliens and the Harvesting of Souls, which I heartily recommend. Now, where do we go? We haven't got much time left.
Yeah.
There is let me throw the proverbial monkey wrench into, or perhaps into this, and maybe you have thoughts on this, but you haven't mentioned this aspect of it. Ben and I work entirely, and I learned this in the late 1970s, that the only thing that really, in my opinion, explained or began to explain the paranormal was the notion of the multiple worlds interpretation of quantum mechanics or some variation of it. And again, that's why I sort of have an unofficial motto. It's easy to explain the paranormal. It's handling the explanations that is difficult. So
yeah.
Where does any do you have any leads in that? Can I pass this question
to Dr. Silverman, who's a bit of an expert on the quantum side of things?
Well, the interesting thing about the many worlds hypothesis is that it sort of, in many ways, fails the Occam's razor test. And the thing that is a much more simple way of explaining all this potentiality, rather than saying the universe splits into another universe each time a choice is made, is, as Schrödinger himself said, the reason why we have this sort of concept that we're making decisions is that actually we are, that we're actually making the universe be what it is every time we make a free choice, every time we use our will, that is the immense size of any sentient being, that it's actually capable of doing that. And you see, the thing is that you can't make anything like that artificially. You can't make a machine that can choose freely. However complicated you make a machine, however high your technology, the machine is nothing more than a glorified lever, if you like. It's a vacuum cleaner.
Are you sure?
However complicated you make a computer, you type in the numbers and the answer comes out, but the computer itself has no concept of what a number is.
Well, my son, the budding shaman, who just came back from the Navajo Reservation, pardon me for interrupting, might say, well, all things have spirits, including robots.
Well, you see, the point about us, as Descartes said, is that we think, therefore we are. We have this sense of knowing which we derive our existence from. Now, if you say that a robot has a spirit or something else has a spirit, we're defining it as being that robot. If a robot is on the ground, where does the robot end and the ground begin? Or is the whole of everything having a spirit? We have a spirit that we, in the sense of having sentience with awareness and choice, because we have an individual perspective and because we're able to be aware. Now, if we really were to actually... People often say they believe that robots have minds and that computers have minds, but when are they going to start charging people with murder for unplugging their computers? Do you see what I'm saying? We
I see what you're saying. Yeah. Well, Descartes denied that on his deathbed. He threw out the whole "je pense donc je suis" thing. He said it wasn't good enough. Not to be David Hume here, but I mean,
it's not the full story. But you have to. You know, if you can think, then there must be something which is thinking.
Really? Yeah. How do we know that?
Well, the only way we can know that.
It's a comforting
thought. If you're deluded, then something has to be deluded. But I mean, the point
is to recognize that you're talking to us at this moment across the Atlantic, and I'm talking to you the other way around.
We definitely could be talking to Dr. Silverman again. Might have a separate guest.
Yeah. That might be the. But you see, Paul, that might be the only definition of exchange that we can ever prove to be valid, because everything else would be subjective. And how do we know whether anything that's subjective within ourselves is provable in any kind of sense except to ourselves? And is that going to be 6 billion, 600 million, whatever subjective ideas or whatever it is that might? We might validate. The point is there must be some kind of extraneous mechanism through which these things may be affirmed.
Yeah. Now, interesting that we were talking about the paranormal here. I was, about 20 years ago when I was a student, I often bore people with this anecdote, but there was an inaugural lecture of a professor of parapsychology. He was the first one to be appointed in the UK. He was talking about the evidence for and against the existence of PSI, you know, PSI, extrasensory perception, mind over matter. And when there was question time, I raised my hand and said, in raising my arm, I've proved at least to myself the power of mind over matter. We're doing this all the time, every single moment, every time we make a choice, when we're using our choice. Now, coming back to quantum theory, the point that Schrödinger made is that actually even the existence of time itself is dependent on the mind, that not just the fact that the electron is only there when you look at it, but the fact that there's only a now when there's a conscious sentient observer to experience now, that otherwise, as Einstein said, the whole universe from beginning to end is there all at once, all together. And there's nothing to demarcate any particular moment as being different from another. But by having minds, we're able to do that. We make there be a now. And Schrödinger's point was that if time is made by the mind, then time cannot unmake the mind. That if we make time, time can't destroy us. In other words, that therefore anything that has sentience has to be eternal. And also that anything that has sentience, the sentience is the same wherever it may be. All that differs is what we're aware of and what choices we make. So he said that ultimately, fundamentally, just as the universe all began at a singularity where everything was all one, we must have all been one as well. And that somehow we seem to have taken on this divided, separated state that we know now. And perhaps physical universes are just a symptom of that. And perhaps people like Yeshua ben Yosef, Jesus, are people who are signposts showing us the way to reverse that momentum, to see that our neighbor is ourself, and that if we recognize that and care for them as ourselves, that we can actually undo that division.
I think the Navajo Indians and all the American the Native American people had a much more profound take on what we might call the verifications of truth. You know, Christ was supposed to have said, I come to affirm truth. And in terms of the way they used to live their lives and the way they had a sense of each other and all the rest of it, are an example perhaps to our Western Euro-Caucasian types of thinking. And I see this when I go all around the world, and I see so much that is sweet and familiar in the sense of the family and so forth. And it seems that with the technological imperative that seems to be coming to us in the West so by storm force, that we may lose this particular thing. And I think that to see the robots and these greys as being part of this etiology may well point the way to what is really true about it all, that they are here and we are slowly being kind of brought into this within that type of binary perspective and lose our sense of compassion, feeling, caring and all the rest of it. And I think that that is something that we ought to look to very, very clearly, but we can't because there are powers, it seems to me, that want to keep this whole factorization of these alien beings a secret, you know?
Yes. I think we're certainly going to continue the duel of the idealists, but we're going to take a commercial break at this point. And then I want to get back with some an email we received from one of our listeners who, and because I don't like to neglect those as well. Conversations will carry us far beyond them. So we are going to be right back with Behind the Paranormal with Paul and Ben. Eno minus the Ben, I'm sorry to say. Stay with us.
Back to Behind the Paranormal
with Paul and Ben Eno.
Call now
248-545-SOUL. New skyradio.com.
And we are back with our very fascinating guests here, headed the group by Dr. Nigel Kerner, author of the excellent book Gray Aliens and the Harvesting of Souls. We are coming down toward the end of the show here, but I wanted to get in a question from Peter in Columbia, South America, who's a faithful correspondent of ours. And Peter, and anyone can take this this question who wishes to, were you able to trace the very first time, quote, gray aliens, unquote, as a term originated? Previously, I believe that Paul Benowitz coined the term, which he claimed was the alleged alien transmissions he decoded. Can you? Why don't you? Well, that's there's more, but why don't you take that one?
Well, in my terms of reference, I mean, it is something that's obviously referred to because it's a description, you know. These things are seen in by abductees and so on, and they're discovered, and then they seem to be a kind of pale bluish gray in color, very short, and the typical description that I'm sure everyone knows about. The problem is that the Aborigine cave paintings actually depict this tiny type of being. Now, whether you can actually interpret that in terms of in the light of, you know, what our visualizations in contemporary times, I don't know. But the fact is that this is simply a description of these short type beings and a kind of pictorial dissertation about their color, the coloring and so forth. And I don't really know whether there's a generic beginning to this or not, to be honest. Well, it's just something I use to illustrate an entity that I believe has been crucial in the interception of human affairs for many thousands of years, perhaps reconstructing our form from primitive hominids to what we call Homo sapiens sapiens now. I think there's a convincing case, if one does the research, into actually saying that maybe we were in fact constructed that far back in terms of whatever agenda that these highly intelligent machines have in mind for us. And I think that we all, any father, you know, you're the father of your son Ben and my children too, that I believe that they really have the right to be able to discern or weed through all of this. And the greatest favor we can do them is to absolutely to try our best to give them the best information possible about this.
Certainly agree. Well, getting back now, Peter refers again to the work of Paul Benowitz. As a side note, the transmissions Benowitz claims to have received also contained a reference to a different alien faction identified as the Orange, which we never hear about. However, T. Allen Greenfield informed me of an earlier reference, a 1961 novel called The Gray Aliens by J. Hunter Holly. What did you discover was the earliest modern use of the term? And I think you have said that, but I don't know if you're familiar with the work of these other people. I'm not.
No. I mean, I have no predisposition towards a direct and personal contact with these things identifying themselves as I am a gray alien from the planet Og, whatever.
Yeah.
I have to say that it is a generalized description that seeks to identify a particular phenomenon that is experienced pervasively and overwhelmingly pervasively by all people who have experienced any kind of phenomenon that is extraterrestrial, if you like, in terms of witness, ordinary rational witness as such, you know.
Of course. Well, let's get down to the wire here. We have much more to discuss, which we'll do on different shows. But the upshot of the entire concern over this issue is, how much of a threat are these things, and what do we do about it? Or is there anything we can do about it?
Well, can I ask Dr. Biggerstaff perhaps to come in here? Now, can I ask perhaps, I understand he may not be available. Can I ask Andrew Silverman to take this one? I seem to have been talking too much.
Well, I mean, the thing is that, you see, we were talking before about the example of someone who perhaps 2,000 years ago showed a way of living which went counter to what science refers to as the entropic drift of everything breaking down into chaos, that through the second law of thermodynamics, that he showed a way of that you could unite instead to do the opposite. Now, the thing is that the if any material threat can only get at you if you are subject to that. Now, something that I've been doing research into, the Turin Shroud, just suggests that actually human beings are capable of even transcending that very physicality itself, that there's evidence, there isn't much time to go into it in detail here, but there is evidence that the human being is able to transform into another form that's not material, and this can be found through the fact that the image on the shroud appears to have been formed by a short, intense burst of radiant energy, and that the body that was in it must have, in a sense, dematerialized at the point that happened. Now, that all sounds very wacky and bizarre, but there is actually there's been a lot of scientific research that has gone into this to actually show that that is the case. And hopefully, if we come back on another program, we'll be able to go into that in more depth.
Believe me, Paul, I was at Pascati recently with Dr. Silverman, listening to the world's top brains
on this particular research, and I tell you, this is something absolutely sensational, and I, for one, am absolutely convinced that this is the final affirmation of our size, and maybe something that these grey machines want to actually borrow, or maybe piggyback on. Just to say something else, if you are to answer your question as quickly as I can, if you are an abductee, I believe you shouldn't despair. I believe that abductees are amongst those whom the Greys are having problems introducing their programs into. They are not something that they want to rob or hurt. I think they have a specialness about them that the Greys can't actually handle. I think that's why they're preoccupied with a particular type of person and so on. I think that perhaps most of the others, sadly, I might add, might be vulnerable to them. And abductees might be the exception. Instead of being something more vulnerable to them, they may be something that resists them. And that's why they're being worked on in the way that the Greys are trying to do that. So interception is thus not the same, you know, as abduction.
I'm awfully sorry, but I'm afraid we're just flat out of time.
Okay.
I want to thank Nigel Kerner for this amazing discussion, and also Dr. Andrew Silverman. We're definitely going to do this again. Okay. I wish we had more time, and thank you for bringing up the Turin Shroud. We wouldn't have had time to do so if you had not done so. So thank you. And we'll be talking with you very soon.
Okay, thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Nice to meet you.
Very good. Dr. Andrew Silverman and Nigel Kerner, author of the excellent book Gray Aliens and the Harvesting of Souls. Check it out. It's a wonderful, wonderful book, absolutely, at nigelkerner.com, amazon.com, etc. And don't miss it.